Before we begin this episode, we'd like to dedicate it to the victims of the tragic shooting that occurred in Pawtucket, Rhode Island earlier this week during a high school hockey game. Another incident of senseless violence has left us shocked, and we are praying for those caught in the line of danger and that are actively fighting for their lives in the hospital. The Hockey House stands with the hockey community in Rhode Island, and we send our condolences to the families and lives lost during this unfortunate event. Welcome back to the Hockey House Pod, episode number 163, presented by Selly Hockey Co. I'm your host, Alex Herman, as we bring you all the latest news from the ACHA and club hockey. Well, boys, I'm sorry that I missed out on last week's recording. Had some stuff going around on campus with Senior Day, was a little bit jammed up with all that fun stuff, but happy to be back in the locker room with you guys. Hope everybody's doing well. Fill me in. What do you guys got going on?
Yeah, we're just getting back into the swing of the week. We had a split against Illinois this weekend. Came out flat Friday night. They took Friday night's game, and then we took the Valentine's Day Saturday night game in a heater. But I think story of the weekend on that one is that going around Instagram, there's this guy that was standing by our door every intermission, just asking every single one of us for a stick every intermission, before warm-ups, after warm-ups. And the video does it justice on how annoying it was. He's just begging, and there was another guy behind him basically doing the same thing when he wasn't, and it was really funny but also so annoying at the same time, because he's like, this kid wants your stick, but he wouldn't stop. It's not like he's asking one guy, he's doing it to every 21 guy that walked by.
Trucks, can I have your stick, please?
Only if I can break it over your neck with it, because that's the only way someone's getting a stick, is if it's broken.
I think I'll pass then.
I'm like, hey guys, we pay for these. And that was like, one of our guys got mad because I think he came off. It was like, we ended the period rough, and he's just screaming in our ear about sticks. And he just turned and just, we pay for these things. We don't get anything for free. And it was so funny. Dev, how we doing out there down in Florida? Heard a couple crash outs were almost happening. What's going on over there?
A week of weeks. This was the most jam-packed schedule I've had. Hockey House, we've been helping out, you know, David filling in and where we can on the social media. And I love all the submissions people are sending, and I really appreciate it. There has been a learning curve, to say the least. I'm just going to put it out there. Not the most fluent with Photoshop, getting there for now. Also finished up senior week for FAU games, M2, M3, getting ready for playoffs in 2 weeks. Just a lot. Just a ton of things to collect and prepare notes for. Got nationals coming up too. Just a jam-packed schedule. I'm here for it though. Part of the duties, and wouldn't want to be anywhere else right now. So try not to crash out hard, because I was a time or two close this weekend. How are you doing though, Alex? Good to hear from you again.
Yeah, it's good to be back. I had my senior day game this past week. We played Calvin. Unfortunately, we were not able to pick up the win, but it was good to get honored by my teammates and friends and coaches and honor the other five seniors that I came in with. It's crazy to think that we've gone through 4 years so fast, but shout out to all those boys, Sean Potts, Greg O'Bricky, Peter Supp, Griffin Clark, and Sam Carper. And it's been fun. Super hectic last week, but now we prep for regionals, and what better way to talk about regionals than bring up our lead story for the week? ACHA M2 regionals are finally here. Arguably the most dramatic and difficult ACHA national championship to win, just because of how populated the division is. Over 170 teams compete in M2, and the way to get to nationals, it's not easy. You got to go through the regional stage. It used to be different. Some teams had to play 3 games. Now we're changing the format to a 1-16, where each team must win 2 games in a row, single elimination, to advance to nationals. So not an easy time to get through the first stage right before nationals. It ensures that the best teams are going and that the competition is certainly the most difficult. We're going to read through the brackets and give the matchup previews for that.
And the division that might be the bloodbath of the bloodbaths is the Central. February 20th through 21st, they're going to be at 2 venues, the Kubi Sports Complex and the Homewood Flossmoor Ice Arena in Hammond, Indiana. The day's long. On Friday, it's Jamestown, number 14 seed, taking on number 3 Schoolcraft College. And Alex, as Michigan guys, excited for that program being as high ranked as they are. Michigan State, also another from the Mitten State, number 13 seed, taking on number 4 Minnesota, followed up with Sioux College and Minnesota Crookstown. How odd is it that we have two Minnesota schools that look identical with the logo at 4 and 5? Arkansas, number 11 seed, takes on number 6 Maryville. Adrian, your Bulldogs, and Alex, we're expecting you at the time of this recording to start on this day against St. Thomas, number 2. The Tommies won their conference championship. Then Nebraska gets number 1 Lindenwood. Tough crack there late in the day. Marion, conference champion, takes on number 7 seed Wisconsin. And finished up with number 9 Concordia, University of Wisconsin, and Purdue Northwest.
Moving on to our West region, going on February 20th and 21st, playing out of Salt Lake City Sports Complex in Salt Lake City, Utah. Starting off the day, we got number 13, Boise State, playing number 4, Utah State. Up next, we got number 9, Arizona State, playing number 8, University of New Mexico. Then we got number 12, Grand Canyon University, playing number 5, University of Providence. We got number 16, University of Washington, playing number 1, Oklahoma State University. Excited to see what's going on there. Everyone would expect to see Oklahoma State just absolutely rolling, but I would not leave anyone out when it comes to regionals. We see upsets all the time, so excited to see a matchup like that. Next up, we got number 15, University of Texas, taking on number 2, Weber State. Then we got number 14, Texas A&M, playing number 3, Montana State. Then we go on to number 11, Northern Arizona University, playing number 6, University of Utah. And then number 10, University of Montana, playing number 7, University of Colorado.
In the Northeast, a lot of AAU teams came over to the ACHA and make up this field February 21st and 22nd, so Saturday and Sunday, at the International Skating Center of Connecticut in Simsbury, Connecticut. Making up this field starting the day is number 13, Siena, and number 4, UMass, early, 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Then it's Sacred Heart, number 14 seed, with St. Bonaventure, number 3. They were a really good team in AAU a number of seasons ago. Boston College at number 12 takes on number 5 Army. They were conference champion. Number 11 Fairfield with number 6 RPI, Rensselaer Polytechnic. Number 16 Westchester and number 1 Niagara. A lot of people have been saying in our DMs, guys, that this could be the upset of the tournament of regionals. Westchester won their conference in dramatic fashion overtime to play this Niagara team. I would expect a good one there at 3 p.m. or 3:30 p.m. Eastern, rather. Then it's number 15 Bentley trying to go back to nationals against number 2 Farmingdale State. Number 9 Northeastern, a prominent nationals team, been a few times the last couple of years, against number 8 Binghamton. Number 10 Boston finishes the day with number 7 Connecticut College, coming off back-to-back NECA American titles.
And finally, to route out the entire D2 regional tournament, we have the Southeast region, which is February 21st through 22nd. On the 21st, it's going to be number 16, University of North Carolina, Wilmington, taking on number 1, Florida Gulf Coast. Then we have number 15, University of Georgia, taking on number 2, University of Tampa. That's going to be a really, really great matchup. Number 9, University of South Carolina, taking on number 8, Liberty University. Number 10, Roane University, taking on number 7, Penn State University. Number 14, Virginia Tech, taking on number 3, Ohio University. Then we have number 13, Miami University, taking on number 4, Florida Atlantic. A number 11, University of Tennessee, taking on number 6, Indiana University. Another really, really great matchup. And then finally, last matchup of the first day of the Southeast Regional would be number 12, University of Florida, taking on number 5, Ohio State University. There are some really, really interesting matchups in these regional tournaments. I'm interested to hear what's everybody's thoughts on potential good games to watch out of that first round and the reaction to the new format, so that there's no auto bid to nationals anymore and everybody has to go compete.
I'm excited to see a lot of these 9 versus 8 matchups and more than what would be considered middle tier on each of the regional areas, because that's where you're going to see the highest competing games. So I'm excited to see these middle ground games and see who ends up coming up on top of those ones.
The Southeast, I'm intrigued by. I've seen a lot of these teams over the last couple of years. Miami of Ohio, Florida Atlantic, Tampa. I think one that really interests me is when we talked to Joey Mullen last week. Number 3 Ohio, number 14 Virginia Tech. I feel like this is a bruiserweight kind of game. It can go either way. I know Ohio is a wagon, but so is Virginia Tech this year. And I'm also looking forward to Florida Atlantic. Got to give props to those guys. They had this NCAA transfer, Jackson Newendike, come to their team, and he's been lighting it up. Miami of Ohio has a lot of guys that I still recognize. Cooper Eberhardt, Eric Miller, Colin Hartwell, so many veteran guys. With the format being what it is, you're going to have upset inevitable. You're going to have chalk here and there too, but a lot of games that can go either way, and I cannot wait to see the overtime action we get out of these regionals.
I might be biased, but I think the Central Region, even in the first round, has the best matchups on paper. There's just some heavyweight teams in there that have stacked rosters, and you never know what can happen in these tournaments. Anybody can go, anybody can win, and it always makes for some great action. Be sure to watch all weekend on Flow Hockey. It's $30 a month, takes you all the way through now until the national tournament, which is March 12th through 17th. So be sure to head over to www.flowhockey.tv to sign up now and watch your team's postseason runs.
And some other things that we saw go on the weekend was Illinois and Illinois State. Sam, your Redbirds traveled and finished the season series with the win, 3-1. I know you said you guys started flat in game one. David Rass had 2 goals, get over the hump. You guys were 0-7 on the man advantage. Talk about game two, though, how you guys were able to muster confidence, a defiant 4-1 win, and you got an assist in there. How'd it go for you overall in your perspective?
Yeah, we kind of, after Friday night, we all knew it was not what we needed to give, and it kind of, we hit a point where we all realized, like, hey, for us, we're the only sport on campus that has a chance of beating U of I in games like this. Our football teams don't really play each other. Basketball may play each other every once in a while, but not really very often, so it's kind of like, even though the school might not give us that much recognition for it, we're the only sport that is able to go and do it and win series on seasons like that. So we kind of took pride in that, came out really hard. And I think I mentioned it last week on the episode, their rink is super hard to play at. It's very oddly proportioned. It is massive. They pack the barn. The fans are right on top of you. It's definitely a home ice advantage thing. And we came out flat Friday and didn't adapt to it as well as we should have. And then we started to figure it out Saturday night. We came back and hammered it to them. Moving on to the weekend, though. Enough about me. Let's keep moving on here.
With that, we'll move on to our stick taps for this week. This first one will be going out to St. Joe's for them winning the ACCHL Elite Playoffs. Unfortunately, the Hawks missed the cut for the Southeast Regional despite going 24-3 in the regular season, so it's great to see them end their season on the high note, but you read that record, that's hard to believe a team with only 3 regular season losses doesn't squeak into nationals. I mean, I can think about my team. We're 500. We're 11-11. We're 15. We just barely made it in. So you would think the math would put them into the tournament. I don't know. That's kind of crazy. But stick taps to St. Joe's for winning their playoffs and capping off a nice season. Also, stick taps are going to go out to UNLV, the defending national champions in M1, for winning back-to-back WCHL championships this season and last season.
Also should give our love to an ACCHL affiliate conference now, the SEC, South Carolina Cock Hockey. They won the conference this year for those teams. I think this league's going to be expanding the coming years. They get the first one out of the way in its return, so good to see there. Also, Humps Hockey for Connecticut College. These guys have, in my mind, just one of the subtly funniest social media presences on the internet because they post those line sheets and they've all got different nicknames every single game. Credit to them for winning back-to-back Neckel American Championships. TCNJ, they won the Crab Pot. They won their conference championship versus Maryland 4-3 overtime. So Josh Kushner, game winner. Hats off to you, sir, and great job by the whole TCNJ group.
Up next, we have number 2 Ohio beating number 6 Liberty in a thriller with a late game winner. This, looking through the highlights, if you have a chance to go find their video on these, the highlights in this game on both games are incredible. Love seeing Ohio play, love seeing Liberty play, and seeing these two top teams come against each other. It's going to create a lot of highlights, a lot of good things to watch. So if you have a chance to go find that video, it is absolutely awesome. Up next, we have Roosevelt beating number 17 Purdue Northwest in a shootout this past weekend. Crazy to see Roosevelt being on the bottom of their tier, beating number 17, it just goes to show that anyone can win on any given night. Whoever shows up, that's who's going to win that day. Huge thanks to Drake Adams for the submissions and our DMs for that one.
Moving on to our highlights to remember for this week. I saw this one and still can't believe it. This is such an ACHA moment right here. Mizzou's goaltender wound up playing forward for a game and scoring in the game. I believe there is an Illinois State goaltender who did it as well. Such an ACHA thing to see somebody dress not as their normal position, walk into a game, and somehow find the back of the net.
Yeah, about a week prior to that, our D2 goalie had the same thing. He went out their last game of the season, his last game ever. He wanted to go out and play forward. He went out and was able to clip one against Creighton as well, which is kind of crazy to do against the same team.
I don't want to put these guys on blast too hard, but is this the same Creighton team that lost like 43-0 to Oklahoma State? Look, nothing against Creighton, nothing against, I think they're the Blue Hens, nothing against that program, but golly, guys, we got to get it figured out because, I mean, we're getting scored on by goaltenders, we're getting blown on, getting a million views on the internet. I do like Tendy goals. This should be an AC. This might be an ACHA tradition at this point.
I may politely veto the tradition on having goalies skate out. For me personally, like, save that for beer league. If we want to promote the ACHA the way that we want to promote it and have it be good hockey, like, let's keep everybody at their position. I understand it's, you know, it's end of the season, like, we're having fun, that's what it's all about, but I'm a little bit of a purist. I would keep it in-house if it was me, but for Creighton, we might have to pull up the meme clip from Planet of the Apes where one of the characters going, oh no, because that's basically everything that's happened for them in the past couple of months. We'll keep it rolling.
Shout out to St. Thomas Aquinas College for sending in their bid for the Michigan goal. Jason DeSalvo scored against NJIT en route to an 8-1 victory at the Prudential Center, home of the New Jersey Devils.
We actually have another Michigan goal. Saginaw Valley State's Bryson Smith with a Michigan goal against Northwood in the Mid-Michigan Showdown. Two in the same weekend. Kind of crazy to see. I like seeing guys try to pull stuff like this off. Always exciting to see. When they are pulled off, it's always great video to see.
Did you guys watch Monster Jam as a kid? To me, this is kind of becoming like the backflip where it looks cool, but like everybody's doing it. It's more common, and I don't want to use the word simple, but I don't know. Michigan Post, like, I don't see it making its own highlight anymore.
I think the better part of them is more of the reactions you get on the benches from people. More specifically, one of our very own Alex Herman on his just face going absolutely sideways after his teammate did it. But I think that sometimes is funnier than the actual Michigan happening.
That will be an all-time reaction meme is me reacting on the bench when Basil Cook hit the Michigan. Shout out Basil Cook again. I will shamelessly plug you every single day for that because that's my boy. Also, extra sty points for Bryson Smith for doing a Michigan in Michigan. So I think that counts for 1.1 goals. I don't know. Put it on the board somehow. Last highlight to remember for this week goes to M2 Liberty forward Glenn Farmer as he absolutely flew past a defender, tucked a backhander, and sellied hard. This was a clip that we featured on the Instagram feed. Selly, absolutely hilarious. Love to see the creativity there. Good stuff all around. With that, this week's guest is brought to you by the new Hockey House merch, as we got to talk to Arizona State women's hockey forward Cameron Devaney. It's here and it's back better than ever. The Hockey House podcast collection is live. By popular demand, the Hockey House is bringing back the classic original logo design hoodie and is introducing a brand new retro design in both a hoodie and crew neck. Don't sleep on the beanie either as we get into the colder winter months, and head to 614hockey.com and search for Hockey House Podcast, or head to the link in our Instagram bio to see the newest releases. With that, let's turn it over to Cam Devaney. We're pleased to be joined by Arizona State junior forward Cam Devaney. Cam, how's it going?
Doing quite well today. I'm excited to be here for sure.
Always have to ask, we're in such different climates for our hosts of the show. Of course, I'm in Michigan, Sam's in Illinois, and Devin, you're down in Florida. But how are things out in Arizona right now? You guys starting to heat up a little bit?
Well, people might get mad at me for saying this, but it's a little chilly here with a high of 60. So I know I might get a little hate for that, but I've adapted to the heat so fast that when it drops below 70, I'm in a sweatshirt and sweatpants and definitely cold. So I've had some gray skies and a little on the chilly side for me, but it's still much nicer than being back at home for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty cold down here in Michigan. I think today was just about 50, so I'm a little envious of degrees in the 60s right now. Sounds like a good life. We'll get right into things. Of course, we know each other. You grew up in Southeast New York near the Westchester area in Hopewell Junction. Tell us about growing up in that area and sort of the hockey experience that you had through your upbringing?
My hockey experience was a little tough because there's not many teams where I'm from. We had one rink, which I still train out of all the time, Brewster Ice Arena. So that's where my story started. I played Lady Bulldogs and Westchester Express there. But as I got older and, the level started to get higher, we made the move to Connecticut just hockey-wise. So I would commute about 1 hour to 1 hour 45, depending on which team I was on, down to Stamford, Wallingford, a lot of different places. So I never played much hockey in New York besides just training out there. The majority of my hockey career was in Connecticut.
You mentioned Brewster Arena. In the way you guys are speaking, that you and Herm here have crossed a path a time or two. Have you been able to tee one up on him at the time? And how's your conversion rate if you have?
Definitely pretty high, I'd say. I'd definitely say so. He might disagree, but no, we've crossed paths a bunch, so it's kind of actually really cool to be sitting here talking to him right now.
I'll plead the fifth on that one. I'll let you have your moment and say you scored on me a bunch of times, which you definitely have. You shared with us that your dad, Jeff, is a skills coach and has worked with extremely talented college and NHL players. What kind of impact has he had on you as not just your dad, but as a hockey coach as well?
Well, I'll start with him being my dad. He's one of my best friends. He cares for me so deeply, and he has made me the person that I am today outside of hockey, just in general. It's really hard being away from him, especially moving out here. I'm a big homebody, and we're really close, so we definitely both get a little emotional when we are away from each other. But on the hockey part, he has basically been the reason that I am where I am today. I skate with him all summer. I still train with him, but he was my coach for a lot longer than I thought he was going to be. After I went to girls hockey, we kind of thought, all right, you're 13, 14 now. Move into a new program, girls, like away from your dad. And then somehow he found his way coaching our team for 2 more years. So I didn't get away from him that easily. But it's just really cool that I have someone like him to basically teach me all I know. And the people that I get to skate with and train with are incredible as well. So I've been really fortunate to have him in my toolbox growing up, and even now more so than ever. We never stopped, even when I came out here, just over the summer and everything with all the training. So it's been great. And it's also my dad. So, sometimes we butt heads a little bit. He cares so much about me, and he just wants me to be happy no matter what I'm doing. And I think that's something that I've taken. Is even without hockey, with or without it, that he is just proud of me no matter what. But yeah, no, it's really cool to have someone like him being the reason I am where I am today.
And correct me if I'm wrong as well. I feel like I'm remembering this. Your dad also does have a connection to ASU. Was he there at one point in time too?
Yeah, so my dad back in the men's hockey club days, he played club out here. He actually met my mom out here too. So both my parents went to ASU. He was on the team with Greg Powers, who's now the head coach of the NCAA team. So he's done, I think he came out 3 or 4 years ago to do their skills for a summer too. So he's been out here. But yeah, no, that's why he was so excited. Not excited, but a little bit excited when I decided to transfer out here because he knew I'd love it. Just much seated.
Now, getting into your youth and a little bit of just prior to college life, you spent a couple of years playing AAA high school. How did those experiences kind of get you just progress as a hockey player?
Yeah, so I played boys mostly growing up until I was about 13, and once the hitting started, I'm a very undersized player. I'm only 5 foot, so definitely on the smaller side. Once we got into checking, I switched over to girls. Playing with the boys, even over the summer and like training with the guys, it's a very different game. And I think that my game reflects a lot on more seeing the ice and playmaking more so than like skill. I was also partly my dad's influence for sure. But yeah, growing up, played mostly the boys. And then once I was 13, I switched to Mid Fairfield Stars, and I was with them until I was 19 years old. And I also played at Lewis Chaffee High School. It's a boarding school in Windsor, Connecticut. So I was doing split season with Mid Fairfield and Loomis. I went there for all 4 years. I did 5 years of high school, so I reclassed my freshman year, did 4 years at Loomis, and then I was at Wesleyan University in Connecticut for my freshman and sophomore year of college.
Talk about a shakeup. I can't imagine 5 years of high school. I don't know if I have that in me, but it sounds like you got the most out of it. You've played three different tiers of hockey, from AAA, the high school, NCAA. You know, what were some of the similarities and differences you noticed between those levels of the game?
I think my biggest jump, surprisingly, was actually going from just AAA club to prep hockey. They're very different games. Also, for the split season, a lot of our girls come from teams from all over. So you're kind of just get together for the weekends and play. So it's a little difficult at times to, you know, you're not practicing together or anything like that. So it's a very, like, more individual based game, a little more skill. But then prep hockey was very fast and more team oriented, which was great for my style of play, but it was definitely a big adjustment, especially as a freshman. And I just wasn't really ready for it at first. So my freshman year was a little difficult. Didn't get as much ice time as I thought. So wasn't really prepared for it. And then COVID hit. So I was, we didn't go back my sophomore year. My junior year was my first kind of like real year at prep. Then the college transition was fairly easy, except I had a labrum surgery my senior year at the end of the season. So when I got there for the college season, I was so excited, finally back after almost 8 months of rehab. 4 games in, I tore my labrum again, and I was done for the year. So I missed pretty much my entire freshman season as well. That was really tough just because it started off so strong already. It was a battle for sure. But then my sophomore year, I came back after that, and I had a coach who really believed in me despite everything. I think she was one of the first coaches that I had that really just believed in me as a player. And she made the game fun again after having a tough go at it with high school and coming back from 2 surgeries in less than a year at this point. So my sophomore year of NCAA hockey was like a great year. It was one of the best years, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. She was a great coach, great mentor, great person, and she really made my time there a great time.
And of course, as you're talking about playing NCAA hockey, you spent 2 years with Wesleyan University, which is, of course, a great spot to go get an education and has some decent hockey and plays against some good teams as well. But can you walk us through what went into your decision to transfer from Wesleyan and then decide to go play ACHA on the West Coast?
So for me, recruiting wasn't really going my way first, and I was really struggling to get any looks from any schools until Wesleyan and then a few others reached out. So when I went there, you know, I was super excited. NCAA, coach is great, still love the campus. It wasn't really in the middle of nowhere, which was a big thing for me. I did not want to go to a school that was remote, super tiny, just nothing to do. So Wesleyan kind of had a perfect balance on the smaller side for sure. So just in a good location. But I think what was the turning point for me is I was studying neuroscience there. And academically, as you said, Wesleyan is definitely a very tough school, but it just wasn't what I wanted to do. And the culture of the school itself was not a place that I felt fit me very well. And they always kind of say, if you get injured when playing your sport, would you still love the school? And after that freshman year, I wasn't really happy, but I kind of blamed it on, okay, once I play hockey again, like, I'll be fine. So I just need to get another year like with the hockey, everything will be fine. Then when I did have the hockey back, I still wasn't loving just where I was. And back when the recruiting wasn't going my way, I always kind of joked, oh, I'm going to go to ASU. Like, my parents going to go to ASU. I'm going to go play club at ASU. And then that joke just wasn't really a joke anymore. And the more I thought about it, I was like, they have the major I want to do. I would get to be at a bigger school, things to do, still get to play hockey. And I brought it up to my dad. I remember calling him. This is also a few weeks into the school year. I don't even think we started hockey yet. I called him and I was like, would you kill me if I wanted to transfer to ASU? He kind of like went silent. He was like, what makes you say this? But he was not mad at all. And I kind of thought that my parents were going to have like this crazy reaction to me wanting to leave a school like Wesleyan, because it's such a great school. It's a great program. You're playing these amazing teams. Both of them, I think, were so okay with it because they knew how unhappy I was just with the school itself. It really just had nothing to do with hockey at that point. I just wasn't happy where I was. And, you know, there's always that stigma of going from NCAA to playing club hockey. And I think that was just my biggest fear at that point. There was nothing else holding me back besides that stigma. But everyone I talked to about it, I kept it on the like downloads because I didn't want it to be a huge thing. I told a few people, but everyone who I told knew that I was going to go out there just because it would fit me so much better as a person. Now I'm majoring in something I love, really like my classes. Even the team culture is great. It's not what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be a lot more relaxed playing club hockey out here. We're traveling to North Dakota, Missouri, went back to the East Coast, playing these insane programs, and the talent is the same, even better at points than what I was playing NCAA Division III. So there's really not a comparison hockey-wise. It's just club. It's the title at this point. It's the title and the money and all of that. Yeah, it was just a no-brainer. Everyone kind of knew that I was going to love it and decided that it was right for me.
Is it safe to say at this point, now almost an entire full season with ASU, that you think that this was the right choice for you?
Oh, I have no doubt in my mind. Everyone asks me that. Do you regret it? Do you think this was the right choice? I say I absolutely don't regret it, and this was 100% the right choice. I just feel like I'm a much happier person. I mean, can't be unhappy when you're in the sunshine 24/7. The girls out here are just also wonderful. Like the team culture is so strong, and I feel like I've grown so close to these girls in such a short amount of time, especially, I guess. I'm considered a rookie. They definitely treat me with respect and they treat all the rookies with respect, but I was a little nervous. You're moving across the country. I've been home for so long. Even when I went to boarding school when I was in college, I was always an hour and a half from home. I can go home whenever I want. I can't just get on a plane and fly across the country anymore. It's good that I found a group of girls that make me feel comfortable and they take away from me missing home and everything like that. But the team culture is just one of the best things. And I've made some great friends out here for sure. And the hockey is just so fun. I love getting to play all these new teams and traveling to all these new places.
You mentioned a lot about the environment at ASU, the culture out there. I gotta ask, what was it like playing your first game at the new Mullet Arena out there? Because everyone sees videos of how crazy that stadium is. I just gotta ask what it was like for your first experience there.
Mullet is so awesome. Obviously, we're not packing the stands as much as an NCAA game, realistically, but it doesn't matter because just the environment you are in is so cool. And like every time we get to play a game on Mullet, we're all so excited. Like we love playing on Mullet. The vibe, the atmosphere is just incredible. My first game on Mullet, we played U of A, so huge rivalry game. Obviously, I don't have that connection with U of A yet. I didn't know anything. I don't know. It's kind of cool too, because I don't know anything about any of the teams we're going to play until after we play them. So like these girls have all this history with them. Even like when I was at Wesleyan, we kind of knew a little bit just because you know all that you played youth with all these girls growing up, so you know these people and everything. I know nobody. There's not been a single person on a team I played that I've known them, but I love kind of going in blind to a game. It just kind of takes a lot of the pressure off. But yeah, first game, Mullet Arena against U of A, so that was cool. We have a really cool picture under like the Fear the Fork sign, all lined up on the blue of the national anthem, and it just speaks so much, like so many words. That photo, it's incredible. It's one of my favorite photos I have. It was a great game. It was our first win of the season. My pants fell off in the middle of the game on the ice. I don't know how it happened, but my dad said only your pants would have fallen off at Mullet Arena. But it was definitely a game to remember for sure. It was really cool. And I loved playing in a big arena like that. It was just so different. Because you just walk in and you're automatically just dialed and locked. Like the whole vibe it brings just really elevates the game itself.
I like that you mentioned the enjoyment of playing new faces. That means you're going to enjoy nationals a lot because that's kind of the thing that I've heard from so many players that go to the national tournament every year. As far as the Mullet Arena experience, have you gotten the chance to go to the NCAA games? They've done pretty well. And if so, what's that experience been like?
I did actually I went to my first one. It's kind of tough because if like we're home, they're away, or they're away, we're home. So we haven't really been on much of the same schedule. But I did go to their game against North Dakota. Wasn't their first set of series games against them. It was, I think, their second. They didn't win, but it was sold out. There was a ton of North Dakota fans there, which was so random that all of them came down to Arizona. A close, super high scoring game. It was so much fun to watch. Those guys are incredible. I love watching them skate. They have this a great mindset. They're so skilled and fast, but you could see that they still have so much to work for. It's not like their career's done or, they're in like a safe place. Like, they still have so much to work for, and you could see them like just how hard they work when they play. I forget what the score was. It was like maybe 6-4. So it was a high scoring game. So a lot of it was pretty rowdy for sure. But the atmosphere was incredible. It was so much fun. I had a great time. I wish we could go to a lot more. But yeah, no, that was really cool. And that was my first ASU game that I got to see. So fun one for sure.
Speaking of atmosphere as well, I mean, Tempe as a city is very, very lively. There's a lot of stuff going on. What's the lifestyle like out there?
You got a lot of walks of life. You got a great mix. So if you're curious about like the, ASU is very notorious for being a big party school, the bar life, all that. I'm not one to really go out, surprisingly. But if you do want to go do stuff, you can pretty much go anywhere. There's always something to do, which I feel like that's what I was missing at Wesleyan as well, is I felt stuck a lot, which even though I was in Connecticut, not far from things, you always have to drive and there just wasn't much to do. It wasn't like, oh, like, let's go here, let's go do this. I can go hiking, I could go downtown to the mill, I can go into Scottsdale. If you're a big golfer, you can go golfing anytime you want all year long because it's always warm. I have a pool right outside my house, so once the sun's out, I'm gonna be sitting at the pool doing my homework. But there's just so much to do in Tempe itself. And Tempe is just a small part of the greater Phoenix area. You can go into downtown Phoenix. You can go, Sedona's not far. I recently went to Sedona and it was incredible. I want to go back. It's only about 2.5 hours from where I am. The Grand Canyon is a little further north as well. So Arizona itself is just, there's so much to do and I haven't even seen like any of it yet. It feels like I've still been just in Tempe and there's so much more to it. So I'm excited for getting to spend some more time out here, planning a trip to Sedona again soon in March, which I'm excited for. And yeah, there's just a lot within the area. I feel like I'm never really sitting at home doing nothing. I'm always able to do something, which I love. I love being just go, go, go and getting to do a bunch of stuff.
Now, you mentioned that this year you were still considered a rookie on the team. Tell us a little bit about your rookie idol and a couple of the rookie things that you've had to do this year.
Okay, so rookie idol, we went to North Dakota and we went on a 2-hour bus ride. I think we were going from Jamestown to Minot. Or vice versa, I forget. And there was nothing, just flat grass for 2 hours, barely any cell service. But we did our rookie idol, which you get the mic on the bus. The way our team does it is you put on headphones that blast the song so you can't hear yourself singing. So I thought it was just gonna be like karaoke, but no, you can't hear yourself at all. And you're yelling into this mic, and every rookie gets a song based off their personality with the upperclassmen, well, with the other team thinks of your personality. For some reason, I got Bodak Yellow, which I have no idea why that was the song that came to mind because I feel like that's just not me at all. But I took it and ran with it. And when I came out hard and I was so not afraid because I feel so comfortable with these girls that I feel like my shy side kind of was just gone at this point. And I gave that rookie idol my greatest go, my greatest effort. Then basically you vote about two rookies. This is also for a solo seat on the bus, mind you. This is what it was all for. It was a solo seat on the bus, so you didn't have to sit with another rookie. And then they pick two rookies. And then you get assigned a artist and you get to pick the song. So my final performance was Born This Way by Lady Gaga because they picked Lady Gaga and I absolutely killed it. And honestly, there was no question who was going to win. And I also wanted that solo seat so bad. I had a lot of motivation. So that was really fun. And that was such a team bonding experience. All the girls got great, great songs. It was also kind of cool to see like what everyone else picked for that person because some of them like they fit so well. We have one girl, and they gave her Barbie Girl, and she that's just her. And it was like it made sense for her. So it was just really fun. It was a great team bonding experience. It lasted way longer. It killed a lot of time. Our coaches were sitting at the front of the bus where the mic was, and they were, oh, I felt so bad for them. They were just had to deal with it. Our one coach, though, our goalie coach, he was eating it up. He thought it was great. Our other coach was just waiting for it to be over. I thought we sang pretty well, so. But that was a great time for sure. Great team bonding moment.
This weekend, it's a big one for the club teams. M1 with Arizona. You guys have the Cactus Cup too. I know M2 is at regional. For your team, how excited are you to finish out the regular season with Arizona? I know you said you're still kind of new to the rivalry. How are things getting wrapped up in the regular season for this one?
After the last game with U of A, I want to kick their ass. It was a bloodbath. It was a crazy penalty game. They came out and we've beaten them every time this year so far, but it was just a battle. It was a grind of a game. Even when we were up, it was back and forth, and it was a tough game for sure. And now we're playing at their rink, so we have the home advantage the last games. I think we played them three times already. But now they got the home advantage, which is tough. We got to travel down to Tucson, but I'm very ready. And we had a tough weekend last weekend, which kind of hurt our rankings a little bit. So this is a must sweep weekend for us right now. We really, really need to come together to beat U of A. It's going to be a fun one. It's going to be tough, and it's not going to be easy. We can't go into the game thinking we got it. We beat them three times. We did that this weekend, and unfortunately, we lost. So it's going to be tough for sure, but I'm really excited to play them, especially for it to be our last regular season games. It went by so fast. And our second half of the season was a little lighter on the game end, so we haven't played as many games as the first semester. I'm super excited to get to go play them again, get another opportunity. But yeah, we just got to kick the crap out of them. That's all I can say. And it's gonna be a battle. I'm really excited for it though.
Well, it seems overall the ACHA experience, at least for your first year, has been extremely positive. And we've got another question for you that we ask all of our guests. I think there's a point in the year where you kind of realize you're in the ACHA, and we call it our welcome to the ACHA moment. So is there a point this season where you felt like you realized you had your welcome to the ACHA moment?
My welcome to the ACHA moment was probably waking up at 5 a.m. for the first practice of the year. And I was like, oh, this is my welcome to the ACHA. yeah, we do practice every morning. Well, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 6:50, bright and early. Got to be at the rink at 6:15. So getting up early was definitely an adjustment at first. But that was a big welcome to the ACHA, which is kind of a funny one. But I think another one that I can think of is the diversity of teams you get to play. And I know, like, for women's hockey, it's obviously smaller. Even in NCAA, you're all kind of like on the East Coast and then Minnesota. Here, there's teams everywhere that you don't even think of. So I think my first like road trip when I got on a plane was like, this is like club hockey, but it felt different just because it was like you're playing all these different people in all these different places, and there's so much more than the NCAA title. It's people from everywhere going to all these great schools and really cool places. And I think that was a big welcome to the ACHA moment. It's just getting to play all these new teams was really, really cool. Just teams that I never, schools I never thought I would see or have heard of in my life. But there's so much more to women's hockey that the NCAA lets on, just because there's so many more schools and so many more people who love the sport and maybe just didn't get their shot. We're all girls that maybe like didn't get the shot, or transfers weren't happy where they were, and you're all coming from different backgrounds. But when you come and play together, it's just a high level competitive hockey, and you love it.
I couldn't second that thought any more than exactly what you just said, because I think people realize very quickly the diversity of the ACHA as you were speaking to. There's so many different teams from schools that you might have heard of but didn't realize had hockey, or a school that you had never heard of that actually winds up turning out to be one of the best teams in the league. So I have to agree with everything that you just said. But as we get towards the end of the interview, we got some lightning round questions. We reached out to some of your teammates, and they had some things that they were curious to hear you talk about a little bit. So this first one comes from Quinn Eatinger. She wants to know about Frank.
Oh my goodness. Frank's our fish, and he got left at our house when I moved in. He's the fattest goldfish you will ever see in your life. His tank is huge, and I feed him, I clean the tank, but this goldfish is a monster. Won't die. I left him when we all went home for break. It was like a month and a half, no one fed him or anything. I was so ready for him to like be gone when I came back. He's still here. You pour food on the top, he like sprints to it, eats all of it. He's so fat. He also like gets really bloated, so he'll like float upside down sometimes, but he's not dead. He just like gets a big belly. But Frank is my like enemy, but also like my bestie, because I would be sad if anything happened to him, and some people are gonna quit me for saying that. But yeah, basically Frank's a really fat goldfish that I take care of.
Next off, we have what is your favorite part about the team?
Ooh, my favorite part about the team is honestly probably just the team culture and how close we are. I feel like we're really comfortable with each other, and that's something I really love. I'm not like we make jokes, we do funny things, say funny things, but like, can get personal at the same time. I could talk to any one of my teammates, I think is like one of my favorite things. I could go to anybody and tell them the same thing that I tell someone else. But I think just the closeness of the team. It's a very tight-knit group of girls, and I love all of them very much.
What's an ideal Cam Devinny workout?
Oh, so I'm a big gym person. Back at home, I train with, his name is Rob. He's with ASAP Training. He is incredible. His program for the summer was unreal. So I'm excited to go back to him for the summer. But while I'm out here, I got, my back and bi day, chest and tris, legs. But an ideal workout is anything that doesn't have to do with cardio or running. Anything but cardio is my ideal workout.
Last one up here, we want to know about what the pregame ritual is.
We have a very specific pregame ritual. I get to the rink earlier than the 2 hours, usually like 2.5 hours before. Do my walk-in. We are big on the walk-ins photos, but I get out of those dress clothes real fast and into just our warm-up stuff. Usually I'll sit in the stands and I'll play 3 or 4 songs on my headphones and just kind of hang out, chill. Sometimes I tape my stick. I actually don't tape my stick every single game. I do it sometimes, but don't tape it every game. If I had a good game the day before, I won't tape it the next day. I'm very superstitious like that. So if I'm not playing well, I'll tape my stick again. But then I get dressed. So then we go for warm-ups. I get dressed really early. So I have about 20 minutes sitting in my gear. I like to sit in my gear. I can't just get onto the ice and go. But I sit on the bench. I play 3 songs. Ain't No Love in Oklahoma, courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue, and Open the Gate. And I listen to those 3 songs, and then I pray before going back into the locker room. We do our on-ice warm-ups, and then here at ASU, we have a prayer circle as well after the on-ice warm-ups. So I do that before every game.
Very good. Sounds like you got it down to a science and down to the last second. Got one more question as we wrap things up. For a prospective player who's listening to the show right now, what's your one sentence pitch for Arizona State University hockey?
You get to play hockey, and then you get to go sit in the sun and go lay by the pool after practice if you want to. That would be my one pitch.
What's better than that?
There's nothing better than that. You can ask anybody, there's nothing better than that.
Absolutely love it. Well, Cam, with your playoffs coming up and of course the national tournament down in St. Louis, good luck to you and your team going forward. It was absolutely awesome to have you on.
No, it's awesome to be here. Really appreciate it. Really cool for our program to be mentioned on here as well. So I was just happy that I got to do it.
Thanks, Cam.
Of course.
Great to talk to Cam Devenny of ASU. Looking forward to see what her team is able to get done this year at the national tournament and also as they get into playoff time for their conference out west. We'll turn it over to the game of the week for this week. It's going to be Friday, February 20th at 7:30 p.m. MST as M1 number 16 Arizona takes on Arizona State at the Tucson Convention Center. This is a winner-take-all game in the Captus Cup finale. Back in mid-January, just two episodes ago, both games went to overtime, and Arizona took Game 1 from the stick of Jacob Vockler. Game 2 was extremely scrappy. ASU took 6 penalties in the second period alone, including 2 game misconducts. Arizona lobbying for an at-large bid right now to the national tournament. Don't want any chances that they could drop in seeding or out of the picture entirely with a loss to their rivals. Wildcat fans always pack the Tucson Convention Center, so this is certainly going to be a fiery, fiery matchup.
Last time we talked about this on episode 161, a lot of it was, can Arizona State, with their strength of schedule, bump themselves in the last couple of weeks? And it hasn't really gone their way. They've lost 4 straight coming into this. Their last win, though, was against Arizona in overtime at home. Matthew Gross, their leading scorer, had the game winner. Goaltender Nate Glenn has been documented on this pod. He was terrific. 3.29 goals against average, .913 save percentage. For an ASU team that's struggled this year defensively, a lot of shots, he's been able to take that amount and keep them in games, and he's a big reason why they won against Arizona. 53 saves on 56 shots in extra frame. But if you're Arizona, I mean, you want to take care of this because they've won 3 straight. They're coming off a huge win against number 13 Grand Canyon, who's kind of had their number earlier this year. Dylan Walker had assists on both goals in that game. Goaltender Hayden Gold stopped 34 of 35. They're feeling good about themselves, and they're in right kind of position to get to Nationals. They've got a long break after this. Kind of a deal you want to finish this up in the right way. I really believe that they have all the resources right now and all the momentum going into this.
Yeah, this series this season has been back and forth. The season series is tied at 2 games apiece. The Wildcats have just barely a slight goal differential bonus with a +2. Dylan Walker has scored or assisted on 10 of 13 of Arizona's goals against ASU. Like you were saying back in episode 61, all but one of Arizona's overtime games this season have been against ASU, and the Sun Devils are 4-2-2 in overtime games this season, so you want to keep them out of overtime as much as possible because the Sun Devils are pretty damn good in overtime this season.
Certainly going to be a fun one to watch, and you can catch this game for free on Arizona's YouTube channel at UA Hockey. We got some good games to watch this week. We're going to keep it in the M2 division for all of them because we have the regional tournament Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of this week. First up, it's going to be in the Northeast division, number 7, Connecticut College versus number 10, Boston University. 2 NECHA champions, Conn College, and then from the American, BU from the Patriot. BU has not made nationals since 2016, so I'm sure they're very hungry to try and get back to the tournament, and Connecticut College looking to make the big dance in back-to-back years. So a lot on the line for those two teams.
In our Southeast matchup, we have number 3, Ohio University, going against number 14, Virginia Tech. It's champion versus champion. We get a regionals rematch last year. Ohio beat Virginia Tech 3-2 in double overtime to go to nationals last year. Nick Josefiak, probably butchered that, sorry buddy, had the game winner last year, and he's also Ohio's leading scorer this season. The Bobcats lost in a tough pool with national runner-up Montana State last year. Hokies are ACCHL playoff champions for the first time, but haven't been to the national tournament in a long time since Joey Mullen's tenure began back in 2012. So emotional on both sides. Who do we think will take it? I'm excited to see this game. This is going to be a huge matchup.
I'm going to go with the emotional favorites. Virginia Tech seems like they have to do something about last year. Joey told us on the pod last week how much it stung. Those guys don't forget that. I think they're going to want to come out early and get the jump on Ohio. I know they're really good, though, this year. They're having pretty much a generational year in the TSCHL. Should be fun either way. In the Central, Alex believes this is pound for pound the best division, and I think a game like this describes why. Number 8, Purdue Northwest, and number 9, University of Concordia, Wisconsin. What's interesting is PNW was runner-ups in the Hap Cup final, so the NCHL championship with Marion, lost in overtime, and Marion had to do that in comeback fashion in the final minute. So it's not like PNW is walking into this as like an underdog. UCW, they have been to nationals a number of years, right? I think they had some of the top scorers on their team in the ACHA. After missing out last season, you know they're going to want to be hungry. They're usually a good regionals team, so I feel like this is probably the best 8-9 matchup you can have among all of them that we expect to be competitive. Sure to be a treat there in the Central.
out in the West, last but not least in this section, we have number 6 Utah playing number 11 Northern Arizona. Utah this year, the only team to hand number 2 seeded Weber State a loss in regulation last weekend, and then ended up losing to Montana State in the championship game. But just to be able to hand Weber State their first loss in regulation this late in the season is absolutely huge. So definitely something to look out for them. Northern Arizona has been playing really well as of late, wins in 4 of their last 5. Forward Kale Desler has points in 10 of their last 11 games. So they're also going on a little bit of heater here. So excited to see this matchup.
All 16 teams from all 4 regions that qualified for the regional tournament, of course, in action this week, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. 4 teams out of every region will make it to the national tournament. Excited to see how that all shakes down. So we're certainly going to keep our eyes on that. Also to watch this week, there are conference tournaments happening this weekend at the Men's Division 1, Men's Division 3, Women's Division 2 and Women's Division 1 levels. We won't read through the matchups individually, but we'll give you the conference tournaments just to make everybody aware of them. In Men's Division 1, we have the MCH M1 conference going head-to-head, the GLCHL, the WHAC, the CHMA. First, at the Men's Division 3 level, we have the College Hockey East, the CHE. We have the Michigan Collegiate Hockey Conference, which begins February 21st through 28th. The Indiana Collegiate Hockey Conference, the ICHC, and rounding off men's 3 play, the MACHA. At the Women's 1 level, we have the CCWHA, which runs the 19th through the 21st. The Women's Midwest College Hockey, the WMCH, the 19th through the 21st. Those conferences going on at the same time. And then in Women's Division 2, CCWHA playoffs as well. IWCHL going on as well. Conference playoffs, regional tournaments. This is a big time week for ACHA hockey. We got some great chatter from the crowd this week as well. So shout out to the Hockey House fam for all of your submissions. Got some great things to talk about. First up, club players going international.
Yeah, so I'm someone where I would love to go do it. And I think it's one of those things where it's very much dependent on where you go, what country you're in, what league you're in, what team you are in that league kind of thing, where you could go and you get there and you go, this is awful because you're just, your team isn't treating you well or whatnot, or you get there and you're like, I never want to leave. So I'd love seeing it. We're seeing more and more guys go from the ACHA to minor hockey out here and then jumping from minor hockey here out into Europe. So I love seeing it. I think we're going to see more guys doing it just with how the talent is growing in the ACHA. So I think you're going to start seeing more and more of it.
How about the state of men's Division 3 right now? Because there's a lot of craziness going on in that division as a whole.
Every week I see this comment in the rankings that's talking about AAU inflation or Southern inflation. And look, if you judge it based on just rankings, you're going to think it's, in the words we got last week, bogus. Seeing College Hockey South teams and how they've squared up, I do think that the teams like South Florida, Middle Tennessee stack up well. Still your powerhouses, Calvin, Oakland, Air Force are national contenders in my mind. And you've got your good stories. Nebraska, Omaha, we've touched on their miraculous season. It's been, I think, the best in program history. The MCHC, Michigan Collegiate Hockey Conference, got shooken up. That caused a lot of teams to kind of even out. I feel like you don't see as much of like just all chalk. Grand Valley State through like a Northwood or an Oakland. The Matcha is coming back. Like there's still good teams there. I just believe it's in a healthy place. It's not as weird as people maybe think it is, or as like catering to one side. Certainly you're going to see some repeat guys like St. Vincent's in there. Wentworth, I think, had a big win this weekend against Sacred Heart. It's going to change though, among all things. But I believe that you're going to continue to see this where like Southern teams make their presence in it. Michigan, Florida, Midwest, that's kind of the branch right now, but it's going to continue growing.
Our last question, and I can speak to this myself. I would love to throw in my answer immediately. Boys, what's been your favorite conference or division to watch in the ACHA that isn't your own? For me, I have to go with Women's 1 as a whole, and here's why. That ranking of those teams has been jumbled up so many times this season, and everybody within the top 10, maybe minus Liberty, has beaten everybody in the top 10. You know, Liberty's the one exception because, you know, of their record and how well that they're doing this season. I just love how competitive that division is right now. I mean, there are some good teams, and if you're having a night, you could upset a team. I like women's one, to be honest with you, and I'm really, really impressed with the level of play that they have going on for them as a whole.
I was gonna jump straight into saying M2 just because of the wide variety of everything that you have. You have these crazy teams like Oklahoma State, but then you go and you see the more even matchups. The games are just barn burners, and it's just constant chaos, and people are all over the place, but the games are always really good in that middle tier. Yeah, the high end might be a little bit more landslided, but the middle to upper middle tier in M2 is always interesting to see who comes out on top. When you just brought up that women's one division, I was like, well, okay, you got a good point there. Every time those rankings come out, there's at least five or six teams that are constantly jumbled up. You're not seeing the same teams over and over again. So I think between those two divisions, it's hard to say one over the other for me, but it definitely is a good battle between the two of them.
I'm going to say the TSCHL, the Tri-States Collegiate Conference, because even though you have your cream of the crop, your Ohio, your Indiana, Miami, it's still been a lot of competitive games. They had a really good tournament. Yes, Ohio ended up winning and being a chalk team, but from a branding standpoint, from the social media presence, it's easy to follow, and you get teams playing really close that are national contenders. Like in Indiana and Ohio State feels like a nationals game every time I watch it. Michigan even, that's kind of in the middle pack there, makes it interesting. So I love the TSCHL. I just think they do such a great job from top to bottom. And they post those national rankings with all of the regions. Not that they mean anything in the grand scheme, but they're just kind of food for thought. I love watching that conference, and I like the teams, and I really hope that some of them go on deep runs, and I think you got four of them in regionals, so that's probably my pick for outside of conferences I usually watch. Hey, good job, by the way, on the conference reads. I know I filled like 20 different conferences in there, so.
Yeah. Good luck to all the teams that are playing in playoffs. Good luck to the M2 teams who are having their regional tournaments. And we're getting close to the national tournament, boys. It's almost time to make that trip to St. Louis. So good luck to everybody from around the league who's got games going on this week. We're the Hockey House. We'll see you guys next week.